You're listening to Greater LA, the show on KCRW that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. America got a new president today with the inauguration of Joseph Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris, who hails from California, the nation's first female VP. And amid all the pomp and circumstance, another California voice rang loudly and clearly.
We will not march back to what was, but move to what shall be, a country that is bruised but whole, benevolent but bold, fierce and free. We will not be turned around or interrupted by intimidation, because we know our inaction and inertia will be the inheritance of the next generation. Our blunders become their burdens. But one thing is certain. If we merge mercy with might and might with right, then love becomes our legacy and change our children's birthright.
That's 22-year-old Angelino and the nation's first youth poet laureate, Amanda Gorman, earlier today at the inauguration in Washington, D.C. Well, joining us now are two more Southern Californians who watched today's history-making event. Dr. Ivy Yule Eldridge had planned to go to D.C. but canceled her trip after the insurrection. She instead watched the inauguration from here in California. Hey there, Ivy.
Hey, how are you?
Doing all right. And Highland Park resident Edwin Rivera did fly to Washington, D.C. to watch the inauguration in our nation's capital. Edwin, hello.
Hi.
Edwin, where are you, by the way?
I'm currently two blocks away from the Black Lives Matter Plaza, where I am going to go after this phone call. So I'm just really excited. It's been a journey. This whole couple hours has been a whirlwind of just emotions. And I'd love to say that I was surrounded by other groups of people that were cheering and everything, but everything is just blocked. Like every single block is just one security checkpoint to another security checkpoint. So you just see all these people kind of wandering to see where to go, and because all the restaurants and storefronts are closed. However, this morning when we got up and we were waiting for Trump just to get on that plane and just move on, I dressed up and I got my American flag scarf that had been accumulating dust for the last couple of years. And, I want to reclaim it as a symbol of hope, as a symbol of inclusivity and diversity, because that's what I've always envisioned this flag to be a symbol of.
Ivy, you watched at your parents' house here in Los Angeles. This was obviously a special moment for you and your family. What was it like watching Vice President Kamala Harris get sworn in? I mean, you share the same sorority, right?
We do. Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. And when I say that this has been such an amazing moment for all of the members of our sorority, in addition to just being a woman, being an African American, being an American, this has been a fantastic morning. And I was on a Zoom call with some more of my sorority sisters. And unfortunately, I did not get to watch the inauguration at home like I had originally planned. I had a death in the family. But what it did bring me is come to my parents' house. So unexpectedly, it was a whole nother level of celebration being able to share this with my parents, who are in their mid-70s. You know, my mom, who at one point in her life grew up on a sharecropping farm in Beaumont, Texas. So to be able to have this experience with them and look at how far we have come as a people, again, as African Americans, but not just that, just as Americans as a whole. And very many times we can always say, well, there hasn't been any change, nothing has happened. And it feels like that because we experience certain things and we see certain things, but I do know that I am blessed. I do know that we are blessed, and you do have to acknowledge your blessings. And today it was a blessing for me to be able to share that with my sorority sisters and very much with my parents. It's been an awesome morning.
That was one of the messages that President Biden made today, was that, everybody has a stake in this. And if you lose hope, no matter who you are, if you're, you know, across the gamut, white, black, Latino, whoever you are, if you lose hope, it's going to send you down, you know, into a dark place. And I wonder, you know, Edwin, you you watched from very close. Obviously, you couldn't get to the National Mall, but you did. You were in the vicinity. What was your favorite part?
Well, my favorite part was actually when we stepped out of the Uber and I could see our nation's capital, like as close as I could possibly get before we reached the, you know, the point where we couldn't enter. And you can hear, I could hear Biden's speech from like the distance. And it's just such a beautiful thing to witness that, like, the heart of democracy is still standing. And all of us can still be proud. To circle back to, like you said, Doctor, about hope, it's not a cliche. I don't think it's a cliche. I think we have to embrace it. We have to embrace it as much as we can, because this country is going to continue to see many young women and hopefully a Latinx up in the, you know, eventually. It just, I'm just so hopeful that you know, we can all just finally breathe again.
We also have Alex Padilla getting sworn in as United States Senator today as well. So today in that respect as well, California's first Latino Senator, right?
Yes. I'm very proud of that.
And then Justice Sotomayor, who's sworn in, you know, Madam Vice President Kamala Harris, you know, her being the first Latino justice. You know, there's a lot of firsts. There's a lot of firsts in this administration. And that was amazing to see. And also the news station that I was watching, to have them point that out as well. Again, those glimmers of hope, of hope are what propel us forward.
I want to thank you both for coming on and talking to us about it. Edwin, I know, you know, you're going to be in D.C. for a few more days, so be safe, please, and enjoy your travels across the nation's capital. Edwin Rivera, TV editor in Highland Park in D.C. today. And Dr. Ivy Ewell Eldridge, assistant principal, college lecturer, who watched the inauguration from here in Southern California. Thank you to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, the attack on the Capitol 2 weeks ago today was a graphic and painful demonstration of just how many Americans have come to believe in right-wing conspiracy theories about the election and about the American political system, and how those folks are willing to act on those beliefs. In his inaugural address today, President Joe Biden had this to say.
Recent weeks and months have taught us a painful lesson. There is truth and there are lies. Lies told for power and for profit.
Well, one of the sources that has amplified some of those lies is a small network based in San Diego that's been gaining ground in the right-wing media landscape.
One America News Network, your leading source for the latest breaking national and international news. With nearly four times as many headlines as the other networks. Straight news, no speculation, no opinion. Just the facts.
OAN has been trying to outfox conservative Fox, and it's been getting some help from high places.
Okay, a couple of questions. Go ahead. OAN, Emerald. OAN, OAN, please. OAN. 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 OAN.
Yes, sir. Thank
Very
you.
Good.
That was former President Donald Trump. Max Tani is a media reporter for The Daily Beast. He's been following the rise of One America Network and joins us now. Hey, Max.
Hey, how's it going?
It's all right. OAN launched several years. It's been around for a while. It's headquartered in San Diego. How did it get started? Who's behind it? And where's the money coming from?
One America News was actually founded in 2013 by Robert Herring, who is a millionaire businessman who owned successful business printing circuit boards, actually. And Robert Herring has kind of always been interested in media. He had previously, in the early 2000s, kind of dipped his toes into the TV business with a channel called Wealth TV, which was kind of an aspirational channel that, you know, chronicled the lives of rich people in America and had programs about boats and gadgets and such. But in 2013, he decided to launch this news network, purportedly supposed to be a straight news kind of network that has really evolved to reflect a lot of his political views on the conservative far right. And it's launched the careers of, you know, a few people that you might recognize if you pay attention to this world, including Tommy Lahren and some others. But it really kind of broke out around the 2016 election with the rise of Donald Trump, because it really fully embraced the president, airing all of his speeches and rallies and taking all of those kind of events live. And it's continued to do that by basically pushing most of his agenda, by hiring White House correspondents that have really, you know, lobbed the softest of softball questions, and by pushing some of his kind of unfounded and baseless conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for us to underscore that if it is pushing, you know, what the former president had been saying for the past 4 years, the Washington Post itself has been keeping track of a lot of the misinformation, the false narratives, the lies that had been told by the White House, by the president himself, at 26,000, I believe, or more falsities that that have been told. And you know, with this network, and they're playing the president over and over again, I mean, I guess that's where the misinformation gets amplified, right?
Yeah, that's right. And it's kind of served as another one of President or former President Donald Trump's kind of echo chambers. For example, over the summer, they shared an anecdote about a protester who they said was a member of Antifa, which Trump then amplified, and that kind of turned out not to be the case. And there were just there have been several instances where Trump has really continued to kind of boost a lot of the stuff that that OAN is saying, you know, about the purported election fraud. And
this is about Dominion, right? The Dominion voting system.
Yeah, that's right. OAN has really kind of continued to push this Dominion voting systems and Smartmatic conspiracy theories. These are both rival election technology companies that basically helped tabulate a lot of the votes. And OAN has actually really distinguished itself from other conservative media news networks here. Dominion has threatened a number of these networks with and media figures with defamation lawsuits about the claims that have been made about Dominion, you know, which are completely baseless and, you know, are related to purposefully miscounting ballots. And, you know, while Fox News and Newsmax and others have aired very, very carefully worded segments walking back some of those conspiracy theories, OAN has actually doubled down and was broadcasting some of them as recently as the past few days. So, you know, it's a really stark reminder that they've tried to, as overtly as possible, exist further to the right than Fox and further than Newsmax and Breitbart and other conservative media outlets.
I mean, my question, Max, and look, you know, I've been doing this for a while. I'm a journalist. You're a journalist. And, you know, journalism is based on facts and finding the facts. And, you know, I don't want to dismiss anything. I mean, despite whatever my political views are, or yours, or whomever's, the facts are the facts, right? And that's where we go. We dig deep. But I wonder. I mean, at what point do we hold networks like this accountable for putting out? You know, they may think this is the truth, but if it's not the truth, if court evidence has not come out, if you know what I'm saying, if press reports have not come out, if it's not there, at what point do you say, okay, this isn't the story?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think you are starting to see that with some activists on the left and progressives, as well as some you know, reporters in the media. There's been a lot of attention paid by folks such as myself, other media reporters, to some of the disinformation that OAN has pushed. And this isn't a network that was really on our radar before Trump really continued to kind of boost it. And really, I think that a lot of their power and their status has lied in the fact that they have continued to go factually where even Fox News and Newsmax haven't been willing to go in pushing a lot of these conspiracy theories. And, you know, there is, you know, there isn't anything obviously wrong with cable news networks, you know, having opinions. We see it all the time on MSNBC and CNN and Fox News. What really distinguishes OAN in many ways is, their willingness to, as you mentioned, overlook the facts in crucial cases. And I think there are a lot of people who have consumed and believed a lot of the election, disinformation, and that's had some real world consequences. So you've started to see that to a certain degree in activist pressure on the cable on television providers and places that actually carry OAN. But it really remains to be seen whether that'll have an impact.
And this is really about seeking confirmation, right? Affirmation instead of information.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you can see that with the kind of things that OAN was actually broadcasting today. At the same time that the inauguration ceremonies were going on for Joe Biden, OAN was airing, prepackaged content, talking about all the accomplishments that Donald Trump had. And it's basically ignored much of the Biden inauguration and has continued even today while the inauguration was going on to push out information questioning the legitimacy of his election. And so clearly the small number of people who watch the network, this is the kind of thing that they're interested in. But as we've seen earlier this month on Capitol Hill, a lot of that information can have serious consequences.
Max Tawney, media reporter for The Daily Beast. Max, thank you.
Thank you so much, Steve.
And back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Today is a marker in history for many reasons, but also for its many firsts, especially for Californians. Vice President Kamala Harris is swearing in the first Latino senator for California, former Secretary of State Alex Padilla. He's in on the history and the impact of Padilla's political rise, and he is with us right now. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
As the first Latino senator for the state of California, this is obviously a big deal. Do you think that he feels the weight of this, Gustavo, and how do you think it's going to affect his tenure as a senator?
If he does, he's not showing it. He's always been as cool as a cucumber. Like, this is a man who was a city council member, a state assembly member, has really risen up the ranks and gone through him, going back to when he was a fresh-faced 26-year-old. And what always marked him was that he was never angry. He was always calm. He was always determined. And so, he knew his place in history. He knew what he was doing. So more than anything, he's proud of what he's accomplished, but he knows this is just the beginning, and he's happy to put the weight of the weight of expectations firmly on his shoulders, because his shoulders are broad and they're strong.
26, just like yesterday for both of us, right, Gustavo?
Oh yeah, like nothing.
Yeah, you're a lifelong Californian. You've written a lot about California history and indelibly Latino involvement in it. Do you feel the weight of this moment? And by the way, Padilla was not elected. He was tapped for this, right, by Gavin Newsom. He's going to face re-election in a few years.
In 2 years, to be specific. And yeah, Latinos have yet to have one of our own be elected as a California senator. So we're not out of the woods, to use that cliche, just yet. But I don't feel any sort of way. I'm proud. I mean, we have seen so many great brown hopes in California politics come and go over the years. Antonio Villaraigosa was supposed to be it. Maybe Jose Huizar, maybe Cruz Bustamante from the 2000s, first lieutenant governor ever of Latino extraction. So many have come and gone, and in some ways no one ever thought it would be Padilla, the quiet one, who would make it. So I think this was the best person to be the first ever Latino senator, because he could take it. He doesn't have that ego that might defeat him the way the egos of some of his predecessors did.
But is there any, I mean, think about this for a second. If California has it's a Latino plurality for sure, right? About 40% of Californians are of Latino descent, Latinx descent. So is it odd, do you think, that we haven't had a Latino senator?
No, not at all, because we might be a plurality, but we're definitely still a minority of the voters, and we have been like this for a long time. And this is California. Remember, the state that where Mexican hating specifically is a statewide religion that's slowly going out, but it's still in our DNA. So there was no way you could ever have a Latino even run for senator. I mean, you saw what happened with Kevin De Leon trying to run against Dianne Feinstein. Dianne Feinstein, who's so conservative, she might as well be a Republican, but nevertheless, the power structure that be lined up for Feinstein and against De Leon, who was Latino, Central American, from Southern California, you know, former Senate pro tem, so a guy who definitely was accomplished, but he was Latino and he dared cross the power. And also, let's not forget the Northern California power establishment versus the Southern California power establishment. So with Padilla rising, now expect to see more Southern California get into the overall power structure of California and specifically the Democratic Party.
President Biden, Gustavo, has selected a pretty diverse cabinet, one that he says would reflect America. Javier Becerra is on that list for Health and Human Services Secretary. He has to be approved by the Senate, by the way, where Padilla is joining the ranks. Talk about the sort of emotional resonance that these appointments may have on, say, Latinos in California.
It's cool. I mean, that's really the best way to put it. It's absolutely cool. And again, who better than to represent us than Javier Becerra, who, as Attorney General, really stuck it to the Trump administration and really defended California values, and someone like Padilla. Obviously, this is just the start. There's so many great Latinas who were also, you know, in contention, like Hilda Solis, who, of course, is on the L.A. Board of Supervisors, former congresswoman. This is just the beginning for Latinos, hopefully. And, of course, Latinos who are going into elected office, they just, you know, let's set an example. Let's not be like our white predecessors of the past and get into corruption and nepotism and all that. Let's set a new path forward for this multicultural California, one where it's the best who govern, not the one who gives you the most money.
At the top of the president's agenda is immigration, or it's there among the top things that he wants to do in the next 4 years. Obviously, immigration for Californians and folks across Southern California is a big agenda item as well. Padilla's career was really launched with his immigration activism. Do you have a sense of how Alex Padilla in the Senate will tackle that issue?
This is one of the many children of Proposition 187, the notorious 1994 anti-immigrant initiative that Californians passed by a nearly two-thirds majority, but really turned California into the deep blue state that it is. Padilla was marching against 187 when he was an undergrad at MIT back in 1994. So he's the first one to be able to get to a position this high. So he wears it on his heart, and especially because both of his parents were Mexican immigrants. For him, immigration is not some policy debate. It's personal. It's not just his story, but the story of so many of his constituents. This is a guy from Pacoima, very Latino working class city in the community in the San Fernando Valley. So Padilla is not only immigration, but it's definitely one of the most important things in his agenda.
What is Padilla and we mentioned Javier Becerra as well. What are their relationships, their collective relationships with Governor Gavin Newsom? I mean, I do you wonder if Becerra's appointment at HHS and even Padilla's appointment to the Senate is going to affect Gavin Newsom's approach? Gavin Newsom, who's obviously a bit of a political pariah right now, facing a recall, perhaps, his approach to dealing with the COVID surge.
Well, he had two really powerful allies. They were both very good friends of Newsom, not just political friends, but also personal friends, especially Padilla for a long time. So I think what Newsom has to do and what he's trying to do is basically show the fans up by the embajada that, hey, I still have you folks. Just bear with me as I try to figure out this COVID situation. And obviously, you know, with COVID, like with almost any politician who's had to deal with this, Who really could do good during this? At least we could say with part of Newsom's legacy is that he picked the first ever Latino senator, a U.S. senator, and you had someone in Becerra who obviously the voters selected Becerra and Biden selected Becerra to join him in the White House, but he was very much part of Team California at a time where we were a beacon of hope in a dark democracy. But hey, happy days are here again.
All right, Gustavo Arellano, columnist for the LA Times. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
That's going to do it for us today. Complete coverage of Senator Padilla's swearing-in, by the way, and of course President Biden and Vice President Harris's inauguration on KCRW throughout the day and on All Things Considered, starting at 2:30. The latest, of course, at KCRW.com as well. Subscribe to the podcast. Join your fellow Angelenos and concerned Americans in getting the show delivered fresh to your feed and tell us how you're doing. Are you happy about today? Are you sad? Did you remember to turn off the stove? Did you feel the small earthquake this morning? Ooh, jolted me. We're here for you at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Kat Yore, Ray Guarna, Mario Saavedra, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on this show tonight. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your time and your ears. Have a great night.